Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Sean Eldredge, tell me about your views on education. You're a congressional candidate. You're running in the 19th District against Chris Gibson. Where do you differ with him?
Well, I went to public schools, K to 12, and had incredible teachers. And one of the things I'm hearing about quite a bit when I'm knocking on doors and when I'm making phone calls to voters, particularly when I talk to teachers, but also when I talk to parents, is that people are concerned about the implementation of the Common Core, and they're particularly concerned about the overtesting in our schools.
Sure.
And also—
Well, let me stop you for a minute and tell you that I've read Common Core, and, you know, who could disagree with any of the things they want there? So it isn't really what's in the Common Core. It's the implementation of Common Core, right?
Yeah, it's the high stakes testing. And I would not say we shouldn't test our students. We should. But the question of how we tie that to teacher evaluation, what pressure we decide to put on our young people. I remember the teachers who taught me how to think, taught me how to write, taught me how to love civics. You know, my high school English teacher, you know, every day would ask us, why? He taught me how to think. He taught me how to probe. He taught me how to question my assumed judgments about the world. And that was not about teaching for a test. My junior year high school teacher taught me to love civics, love history, love government. And I think about those teachers, and they had the freedom to be able to bring in their ideas to the classroom, to be able to focus on what individual students were excited about. And I think we need to make sure we retain that in our classroom. So I think we need to, pause any more high-stake testing. I don't think it's helping our schools. And I think if we want to reform our education system, we should start by talking to teachers. And the fact that talking to teachers feels like it's been an afterthought in this process is, I think, it's offensive to those who wake up every day and go to school and teach our young people. And they don't feel heard right now. I know that there were some teachers consulted in the process, but most teachers I talk to don't feel like they have a feedback mechanism, and it's just being these new rules and the new testing is just being brought down on them from on high. So I think that's the wrong way to go. You know, I was reading recently a book called The Smartest Kids in the World, and it's a comparison internationally of different educational processes. But I think we all need to do better to support a good education for our kids. You know, we need to make sure our parents are reading to our kids, or that kids are exposed from a young age to reading, to being excited about learning. It's why I strongly support early childhood education, because if we get to students early, you know, every study shows that has a remarkable impact on them. And then the last thing I would say is, we also need to be innovative. In China right now, every high school student before they graduate has to have at least one class in computer science, computer programming. There's a required class for every high school in China. In the United States, we have a tiny fraction of our public schools that offer computer programming and offer computer science. And I'm concerned that we're falling behind. And by the end of this decade, by 2020, there are going to be about 1 million jobs in basic programming and computer science that we will not be able to fill in our country, because we're not training our workers and our young people on those skills. I see that as a fixable problem. Instead of pushing through more testing in our schools, why doesn't the federal government put together a plan that says, let's expose every young student to computer science and programming? I personally am not a computer science guy. It's not the direction I want it to go in, but let's give young people that opportunity. And right now, there's so many more men than women who are going into computer science. If we made sure that every young woman had a chance to be exposed to computer science and programming, we could fix that incredible disparity right now between men and women in computer science industries. So I think we got to be innovative. We got to do better for our young people. And we got to listen to our teachers and our parents and not just tell them what we think is best for them.
How about firing bad teachers? Where do you stand on that one?
Well, I strongly support the right of teachers to organize and the right for them to have a collective agreement and have a contract where there's protections for them as teachers. So, within that realm, I think we should evaluate which teachers are doing a good job and which aren't. But I think teachers should have the right to organize and work with the labor to protect their own rights in the workplace. I think we should encourage the best and the brightest to get into teaching. And I think we need to have more respect for the field.
There's only one way to do that, as far as I'm concerned, and that's to pay them.
I think we absolutely need to
pay them
well.
I try that with my students all the time. I say, well, if the beginning salary was $70,000 or $75,000, would you be more likely? The hands all go up and say yes.
Absolutely. And I think if we paid our teachers better, if we invested in their professional education, and if we had more respect for them. You know, right now, so much of the conversation about education reform is about how our teachers are failing. Our teachers are working their butts off every day. And I think if we talked about teaching as one of the highest professions you could go into our country, it's as important as being a surgeon in the ER. It's our young people's minds, and it's their futures, and it's their opportunity. So I think we need to have respect for teachers, and we need to encourage young people to see that as one of the highest professions they could go into.
Sean Eldridge, we have 4 minutes, but I want to talk a little bit about immigration. You know, this is a great crisis right now. And I'm wondering, if you had the president's ear, what you would tell him to do.
Well, I think the word crisis is totally accurate, and it's a humanitarian crisis at the moment. But I think we're also right now governing from one crisis to another. And we should have not gotten to this point where we have all these young children and these families crossing the border and to get into the crisis we have now.
How do you stop it?
We had an opportunity last year to pass comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah.
The United States Senate, in a bipartisan way, passed a bill that would have bolstered border security, that would have provided a pathway to citizenship, that would have provided guest worker programs for farmers in our region. You know, when I talk to farmers, one of the top issues they bring up to me is immigration reform, because they want to make sure they can legally hire the workforce that they need. And I think we should pass comprehensive immigration reform. I think the Senate bill was a good bipartisan compromise. You know, you can quibble with details in it, but both the labor community and the business community and the immigration reform community all agreed that it was
really
the right approach.
Do you really think you could have, Sean, I'm sorry for interrupting, but do you really think we could have stopped by increasing security at the border, we could have stopped immigration?
Well, I think in this particular instance, you know, we need to look at our rules. The fact that contiguous countries are treated differently than non-contiguous,
sure.
The fact that families coming from Mexico are treated differently from those coming from elsewhere. We need to fix these particular rules, and we need to deal with this short-term crisis. But I don't think we need a Band-Aid. I think we need comprehensive immigration reform. And Congressman Gibson, you know, who I'm running against, my opponent, came on this show and talked about how he supports immigration reform, but he has not signed on to the comprehensive immigration reform bill that is mirrored off of what passed in the Senate, that currently has bipartisan support in the House, that would fix this problem. And I really want to know why, because he says he supports a guest worker program, he supports more security for our border. All of those things were in the bipartisan compromise that passed the Senate. So our congressman has not supported comprehensive immigration reform, as far as I've seen, and the Speaker, John Boehner, will not bring it to the floor. And to me, this is so symptomatic of how we are governing from crisis to crisis, and we're not getting anything done. And we have to stop kicking the can down the road. Let's pass comprehensive immigration reform. Let's work on climate change. Let's raise the minimum wage. Let's not put off all of these issues as this Congress has done. And unfortunately, on this particular issue, Congressman Gibson, I think, has been part of the problem. The only vote that I've seen him take on immigration is a vote to deport Dreamers. When President Obama paused the deportation of Dreamers, Congressman Gibson joined his
fellow Republicans. A Dreamer in this case, remind us.
So a Dreamer is a young person who was brought to this country through no fault of their own when they're a minor. And President Obama decided to halt the deportation of those people who were brought here, again, through no fault of their own. And Congressman Gibson supports deporting those Dreamers. And when the president paused that deportation, Congressman Gibson tried to take away that ability of him to pause that deportation. I think, you know, I've met with Dreamers and their families in our district, in Sullivan County in particular. I don't think we should be kicking out people who went to school in this country, been part of our society.
Yeah. We have less than a minute. I wanted to ask you something, Sean. You said in an earlier interview that you thought it was tough to come into an election not as the incumbent, but as the challenger, and to get people to know who you were and all of that. Let's assume for a second that, and I know you're not going to like this, that you lose this election. Will you still stay here, create this base, and do it again?
Well, first of all, I love the Hudson Valley. I'm not going anywhere. But the goal is to win this year. And
sure.
And I'll tell you why. I think that two more years of this Congress, two more years of inaction, is harming a lot of people. To me, this is not a theoretical debate. To me, this is about more than me and Chris Gibson. To me, this is about whether our Congress is going to continue to be the least productive Congress in our history, or whether it's actually going to help families in our area, whether we're actually going to raise the minimum wage or invest in job training or deal with climate change or deal with immigration reform. Two more years of this Congress will leave a lot of people harmed, and I think we can't accept that. So to me, we need a much greater sense of urgency and impatience in our political system, and that's a big part of why I'm running.
Sean Eldridge is the Democratic candidate for New York's 19th congressional district seat held by Chris Gibson. Sean, thank you so much for your coming in and talking to us right here in the studios. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me back.